as the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me, and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning. Good morning, Carborough and Chapel Hill. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. And we're back in the studio. I'm in here with John Paul McClellan.
Hello, everybody, and Happy New Year again.
You said that before, but we'll say it again. Happy New Year again. We have a guest in the studio with us today by the name of John Hoyer, to whom we will address ourselves a little later. John?
Good morning.
And just also want to thank everybody that's tuning in on the World Wide Web. I think we have some friends in Florida joining in. Hello, Pam. Hello, Terry, in case you're listening. And we are basically going to cut it a little edgy today by discussing something very, very much on the horizon and very much in issue, at issue, and that is politics, as usual, I suppose, or as usual and worsening going on. So John Paul and I are going to cut the room a little electric with some notions on that, and John Hoyer will add to that as we go on. And, of course, we'll discuss some other issues, bounce around all over the place. We really don't know where we're going. But we're going to get started.
That's not all that unusual for us.
Not at all.
Not knowing where we're going.
We came in here this morning, basically just sort of, I wasn't able to get any, didn't really have the time to get anybody to come on for an interview, so we just thought we'd wing it this morning. And that's the name of the game this morning. And Paul, I think, John Paul, you found out some interesting new things about our political parties on both sides, left and right, and I'm quite intrigued by some of the stuff you dug up and got it actually right off the computer. So it's not conspiracy theories we're espousing or making up here. This is actual stuff you can get on the computer. So I'll leave it. I'll bounce over to you, John Paul.
Well, thank you, Claudio. The thing that I've found actually is quite accessible by anybody who really wants to learn this kind of stuff. It was on Democracy Now. Amy Goodman interviewed a guy by the name of Alan Narin and another guy. I'm looking it up here on my, because I can't remember this guy's name because it's so weird. Kelly Bouchar Vlahos, who was a freelance journalist in Washington, article on presidential advisors titled War Whisperers. So anybody wants to get that information for themselves, just go on Google War Whisperers. And one of the clicks you will get to is Amy Goodman's interview with this guy. And just broadly speaking, what he's done is he has gone and looked at their advisors, the advisors for all the candidates in both the Republican and the Democratic Party who are vying for nominations for president mm-hmm. of their party. And what he found is that almost all of them use these same advisors who have been involved in the military-industrial complex for most of them for decades and are guilty of war crimes.
So the warmongering continues.
Yeah, the warmongering contingent is actually embedded in these presidential primary candidates' campaigns. And this is true for every single one of them except for three.
So we're just getting
different. I'll give you a guess.
We're just getting varying shades of gray. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I want you to, this is a test, okay? Who are the three candidates who don't have these warmongers as advisors?
I would imagine Kucinich being one of them.
Correct.
Go ahead. I'm.
Let's bring John in, see if he can guess.
I'm looking at Ron Paul and Mike Gravel.
I think that covers the field. Those are the three who do not use these advisors. The rest of them, including Clinton, Edwards, and Obama, have these advisors in their campaign organizations. These are people who have been guilty of horrendous crimes against humanity, war crimes, going back as far as the Carter administration.
So, as usual, our politicians are speaking out of both sides of their mouth.
Well, they're liars. They're just plain liars. And
I think somewhere on in the vocabulary or in the dictionary, politician must translate into liar. That's just
well, if you go, if you look in the dictionary, and you look up the word liars, these people's pictures are on those entries.
I can believe it.
Of course, that's a complete fabrication.
Yes, yes.
But
so are they then.
It illustrates the point. So,
how did you happen to come across this?
Well, I came across this somebody sent an email to one of the discussion groups referencing the War Whispers, and then I went and looked that up, and I
found...
What
a stupid title, War Whispers. Why, almost making subtle of something atrocious.
Well, I mean, that's the point of the article.
I suppose.
Yeah, is that here you have these people that are whispering in the background
yes.
to these candidates who are telling us that they're the agents of change, all right? How can they be agents of change when they are employing the very people who are responsible for the crap
mm-hmm.
that we live in right now?
What's the story with Obama? He's employing somebody that's actually with the special interests. What do you call those folks? I've heard the term used so much now, it sort of left my mind.
Well, I'm not sure what exactly you're referring to.
He speaks
to
out against essentially indebting yourself to the special interests, but then he has one of them in his campaign.
Well, they all do. The Obama advisor, here's an example. I'm looking at this online right now. One of Obama's advisors is a guy named Anthony Lake. And I'll quote, he was the main force behind the U.S. invasion of Haiti in the mid-Clinton years, during which they brought back Aristide, essentially in political change, pledged to support a World Bank IMF overhaul of the economy, which resulted in an increase in malnutrition deaths among Haitians and set the stage for the current ongoing political disaster in Haiti.
In an already extremely impoverished nation.
Right. In other words, this is typical of U.S. history, though. We have all these incidents where the U.S. intervenes in these countries, and later the blowback comes back at us.
And nine times out of ten, these are the things that the politicians want to keep discreet because they think the public is safer for not knowing it. And here we are stuck, not realizing what basically, not realizing from the left to the right hand who's doing what.
Right. And, of course, they don't want anybody to know it. And
exactly. And this is why.
And the corporate criminal media, of course, falls right into line with the orders that come from the White House or Congress or wherever. You know, this is not just the administration we're talking about here. This is the Congress
deeper,
of the United
sure.
States, the courts, the administration. They're all in this corrupt criminal cabal together. And most of the Democrats are right in there with them. There's very few Democrats.
Politics is politics.
Exactly.
Explain to us what the Unmedia is for any new listeners that may not realize your segment in the show. I mean, John Paul is my co-host, but he also has his own particular aspect on the show that's called the Unmedia. And every once in a while, I put him on the limb and I have him actually explain what what the Unmedia actually is. So give us the spirit of your work.
Well, you know, we were sitting around talking about what we were going to do on the show, and you, of course, already knew that I would always wax political.
I wax poetical.
Yeah, so that kind of... It's a nice little alliterative phrase. But you said something to me about, you know, well, we should do a segment on that. And somehow the word Unmedia just popped into my head.
Entirely fitting.
Yeah, and it essentially what it means is that we are doing talking about the information that the mainstream media, in fact, most media that's not even mainstream, will not cover.
Because they're primarily publishing things for political reasons to keep you leaning left or right, or I think it's more right than left most of the time. But and John Paul and I have taken it on, and him in particular, to expose that which the newspapers refuse to tell us, or what we can read between the lines, but some of us may not be very clear on.
Exactly. And, of course, all of that is a ploy, basically, and I believe it's a conscious ploy, to present us with a false dichotomy that people then are just brainwashed into making a choice about.
Oh, yeah.
So
the masses, for one.
Well, yeah, the voting public.
Right.
Which, by the way, is in a pathetically small percentage of the people who are eligible to vote actually vote. You know, less than half of the people who are eligible to vote even register. And then of those who register, less than half of those actually go out and vote. So you end up, if you do the math, and this is just rough math, you end up with people in office who are selected by essentially 12.5% of the eligible voting population in the United States.
It's no wonder it's no wonder these atrocities stay in charge.
Right. And so by definition, we do not have a representative government
right.
in the United States, and we never have. And most people don't know, by the way, that in the early years of the founding of the Republic, you couldn't vote unless you were white, male, and owned land.
Hmm.
Okay, there wasn't like elections that selected the president or congressmen or senators.
It was selections.
That didn't happen. Also, you got to remember that in the beginning, there was the 3/5 compromise, or was it 5/8?
3/5.
3/5 compromise, where the Southerners who had large plantations got to vote for their slaves at the rate of 3/5 of a vote per slave.
Oh, good Lord.
So these Southerners who had these huge plantations that had hundreds or even thousands of slaves, that's how many votes they got. And that's why, of course, you had people from Virginia elected to the presidency. You know, that's why Jefferson beat Adams the first time they ran against each other.
Hmm. That's amazing how deep and dark these waters run. That's just, I mean, it's obviously not something that just started. It's been embedded for many, many, it's got many, many layers.
Indeed. And going on to another subject, which the press, well, oh, by the way, everybody listening, both of you, I strongly encourage you to go and Google war whisperers and get a look at what these people have to say, and you can go to Democracy Now! And actually watch it yourself on your computer. They also have the transcript up on their website, so you can go see that. The other subject that I talk about occasionally is the 9/11 subject.
Mm-hmm. Building 7 you commonly bring up?
Building 7 is one of the most telltale signs of the fact that 9/11 was done by people inside of our own government.
At the very least, they let it happen.
Well,
and I know that, I mean, yeah, I'm simplifying something there.
At the least,
at the very least, they
exactly.
opened the gates to
it
let it happen.
It could not have happened without their...
So that they could be advantaged by it.
Exactly. In order to institute the New World Order, the mm-hmm. authoritarian police state.
Which is something Bush Sr. espoused during his time in politics.
Way back when.
Yeah, and it's gone back further.
And he's been actually working at it since the late 1950s, when he was involved in the training of the people who did the Bay of Pigs invasion in Cuba, starting from 1959. And Felix Rodriguez, who was one of Batista's top deputy security people in Cuba prior to the 59 revolution, Rodriguez admitted before a committee of Congress that he was working with George Bush starting in 1959.
George Bush Sr.
George Bush Sr., yes. And in fact, he was heavily involved in the invasion of Cuba and the Kennedy assassinations. Probably Martin Luther King one, too. You know
who knows? Who knows? It goes on forever. So tell me, why is John Hoyer here today? I know you brought him in. Or you are associated and friends. And what's the story here?
Well, we have an event going on that's going to happen next Tuesday at 7 p.m. at the Carbrewer Century Center. It's a debate.
And explain what it is you're involved in with the community, because I don't think everybody on air right now might realize that.
The group that's putting on the debate is called the Coalition for the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd like to do is just let John explain what we're doing.
Thank you, John Paul. We started the grassroots impeachment movement here in Carrboro in January of 06. We planned an impeachment open forum at the Carrboro Town Hall. We expected perhaps to get 25 people to show up. Mm-hmm. For the 70-seat town hall, we had 140 people packing the Carrboro Town Hall to the seams. The next month, we went to Chapel Hill and then up to Hillsboro, Durham, Pittsboro, Raleigh, and generating more interest around the Triangle area in impeachment. And we began to get connected with national groups moving on impeachment.
And that is the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Yes. Yes. Starting in this year, January of 07, we began organizing in North Carolina congressional districts, recruiting coordinators in each congressional district from the East Coast to the mountains to organize activists, to conduct public vigils, hold public forums, meet with their congressional delegations, their local editors, be in the streets, be public, be visible, be loud. And we met with here in the 4th District with David Price back in August. We decided to follow up with that meeting with another public forum here in the Chapel Hill Carborough area, which led to the scheduling of a debate. After David Price indicated that he was not available to meet with us in a public forum, we recruited Michael Tomosky, who's a Democrat journalist, editor of The Guardian America, mm-hmm. who wrote a widely published, reprinted op-ed in the Washington Post on August 5th saying that impeachment is the dumbest thing the Democrats could do. This is used as a reference by Nancy Pelosi and Mel Watt, other Democratic.
And would you explain why he thought so? Because I could not understand why Nancy Pelosi came in, and that was one of the first things she laid on the table, that impeachment was off the table.
Right. And her arguments run something like, it would be bad for the country, it would be divisive.
What, is this good for the country, this crap we're having?
She must think so. She must think so.
Well, it's good for her, apparently.
We had a reception for Nancy Pelosi when she came to speak at Meredith College back in November. We were threatened with arrest by the Meredith campus police if we tried to distribute literature or strayed out of our free speech pen, which was tucked around the corner out of sight of the auditorium where Pelosi was speaking.
Kind of makes a mockery of what America stands for.
And Nancy Pelosi was coming to Meredith College to speak on the subject of ethical leadership.
Huh. Interesting.
How ironic.
And we wrote to voice our complaints to the Meredith faculty. And thanks to Professor Michael McElreath, history professor at Meredith and advisor to the Campus History and Politics Club, six of us dissenters have been invited back to a public forum at Meredith on January 17th. We have several arguments that we'd like to share with the Meredith students, particularly in regard to Pelosi's leadership or lack thereof.
Right.
She had no right to take impeachment off the table.
No, she did not.
By doing so, she places herself in complicity with the alleged crimes of the
Bush-Cheney
administration. And for her to suggest that she does not have the votes to stop the war is a denial of her congressional leadership role. Mm-hmm. If she has the power to take impeachment off the table, she has the power to take war funding off the table.
Exactly.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah.
Somehow that wasn't considered by her when she waxed poetic with that philosophy, huh?
Yeah, well, now on this tangent, it of course now has come to light that Pelosi was briefed about a lot of stuff long before anybody else knew about it. And so that also makes her complicit with, for instance, the torturing that's been going on. She knew about that long, long ago.
That's the thing that gets me. Why are we even questioning that these methods are torture? It's not as natural as taking a walk or breathing. Anything that puts you in any kind of level of discomfort certainly goes more in the direction of torture than anything that's normal or appreciable.
Exactly.
And to return to the issue of the impeachment debate, once we secured Michael Tomosky to basically take the position of Congressman David Price here in the 4th District that impeachment is bad for the Democrats, bad for the country, we recruited constitutional lawyer Bruce Fein, who was an associate deputy attorney general under Republican President Ronald Reagan. And Bruce Fein has become the most eloquent Republican spokesman in favor of impeachment. So we're very excited about demonstrating that this is not a partisan issue. This is a constitutional issue.
Yes, it is.
An issue of patriotism, that it's always the right time to do the right thing. The crimes, impeachable crimes of Bush and Cheney are well known by now. Bush may be the first president in our history not only to admit to impeachable crimes, but to actually boast of them.
Mm-hmm.
When it was disclosed that he was violating the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which requires court orders for surveillance of citizens, he said that, yes, he was doing so, but the only crime involved was the disclosure of his criminal action.
Right.
What?
Indeed, that's what he said.
Yep. I guess he's on a frequency we just can't tune into.
Yeah, he's on some undiscovered planet.
Yeah. It's extraordinary. Just wanted to let you folks know out there, this is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. I'm in the studio once again with my co-host, John Paul McLellan, as well as our guest today, John Hoyer. I'm assuming that's the way you'd have me say the name, or do you have another pronunciation?
Hewer.
Hewer, okay. I'm saying it in the German way. He's doing it in the American translation. But Hewer it is. Anyway, back to you, John Paul.
Well, let's go on with some more details about the debate, John, and see if you can fill in a little bit more.
The debate will take place next Tuesday, a week from today, January 15th, at 7 o'clock at the Carborough Century Center. Thanks to you, John Paul, for leading our technical crew on producing. We'll be having a live webcast at www.coalitionforthe constitution.com. We've sent invitations to all of our congressional delegations in North Carolina, our senators and congress members. I heard last night from our state senator, Ellie Kinnaird, that she had received her invitation, and she's very excited about being in attendance.
And she's actually opposed to impeachment.
She is sort of taking the Tomosky line, that she thinks that it just won't happen. The practicalities seem to trump the legal and moral imperatives, I fear. She's has a reputation of being our state's most progressive, most liberal state senator. Groups are always trying to buttonhole Ellie Kinnaird to get her to back their programs, and she is understandably somewhat shy and defensive about embracing what she sees as a very impractical opportunity.
Impractical in what sense, if I may ask?
Well, same arguments, that it would be divisive, that it would take time away from the business of Congress.
That is the business of Congress.
And that it would be bad. It is, in fact. I agree. And that it would be bad for the Democratic Party.
But returning to the details of the event, we're hoping to have a full house of 250 or more. In addition to our live webcast, we hope that WCOM Radio will carry the program live.
There is a URL already established for the webcast. It's on the Constitution, Coalition for the Constitution site, and you just put /webcast after it. And if you enter that in your address line, you'll go right to the webcast on that evening.
One of the exciting aspects of this event is that UNC Professor of Leadership and Public Policy, W. Hodding Carter III, has agreed to be our moderator.
Who was with the Carter administration.
Yes, he was the Associate Secretary of State. He was a spokesman for the Secretary of State during the Carter administration. Yeah. And he's currently serving as a professor on the UNC campus now.
Interesting. What's his stand, if one might ask?
He spoke to our Farrington Democratic Club back in October, and he said that he's on the fence.
Which is a good place for a moderator to be.
It's a perfect place for a moderator to be.
Sounds a little painful to me, but
he shared,
is it a barbed wire fence?
He shared an interesting historical anecdote with us, and that was that during the Iran-Contra investigations in the 80s of the crimes of the Reagan-Bush senior administrations.
Yeah.
Hodding Carter's wife went to Lee Hamilton, who was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee at the time, and told Lee Hamilton that these impeachable crimes had to be investigated under the mantle of impeachment. And Lee Hamilton told her that the country just wouldn't stand for an impeachment investigation into Reagan and Bush Sr.'s crimes. And Mrs. Carter retorted to Congressman Hamilton, Lee, that's not your decision to make. Your responsibility is to lay the facts on the table, let the American people make the decision.
Yeah, and the same applies to Pelosi.
Since when can he assume anything for the country?
Exactly.
Exactly, yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's give these folks a little breather, time to come up for air. We'll give you some world music, which we occasionally indulge in on the Speakeasy. I have Mohamed Issa Matona performing Msumeno. I don't know if that means your mama or what, but it's good sounding music, and we just thought we'd let you come up for air.
wasegemano wakati wa kupasua. Kazi kubwa segemano wakati wa kupasua. Mabishano bure utakujalia. Ukileta mabishano bure utakujalia. Fikiria.
And that was Mohamed Issa Matona doing Msumeno.
Easy for you to say.
I wish, yeah. I have no idea what he's saying. He probably just kicked me out of the country, but I love the music.
I love the sound of it.
Yeah, it's just awesome stuff.
It's fabulous.
This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, coming at you from 103.5 FM in Carborough. Just a quick PSA coming your way here as we're hitting halftime. There will be a swing dance Saturday evening, January the 12th, at the Carborough Century Centre featuring Bill Newton and the Big Blues Quartet. No partner is needed, and a lesson at 7:30 is included in the price of admission. So for more information, please visit www.triangleswingdance.org. And on that note, John Paul, I shall toss it your way for the station identification.
Thank you very much. That's a good group, by the way, that Triangle Swing Dance.
I figured you knew them being
in
the
dance world.
Yeah,
Richard Badu is one of the guys who started that, and he does a great job. You are listening to WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carborough.
And just a reminder that Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, does welcome underwriters. As a matter of fact, I'm not the type to go knocking on doors, so I would love to have you folks touch base with me on my website, which is www.claudioarts.com. That's CLAUDIOARTS.com. And find the contact information there, and we can do things discreetly. It's very cheap, actually, to underwrite us. And if you folks care about the freedom of expression and the sort of things we toss about, we would certainly welcome your support for the station.
Not that we think you're cheap.
Who said that? I wouldn't touch that with anybody's 10-foot pole. No, of course not. It's just that the price of supporting us here at the station is more than reasonable.
Well, we're all volunteers here.
Absolutely.
And so we don't get paid to do this. The money goes for operating costs.
And if we do a bad job, we volunteer to get shot. So there it is.
I volunteer Claudio to get shot.
Well, I've already put in for you.
He's already put in for me, so it's, you know, turnaround's fair play.
Indeed. So we're going to go back to the edginess of politics and the way things really are.
Indeed.
Back to John Paul's Unmedia Corner, which I think is going to dominate much of the hour today, but it's certainly stuff worth considering with everything we've got going on.
And we
the whole trick is to know what you're looking at.
That's right. And we have with us John Heuer, who is giving us the information about the fine Tomosky debate on impeachment that's coming up next week, Tuesday the 15th at 7 p.m. in the Carborough Century Center. Admission is free. It's going to be one heck of a dog bites man theater type of presentation, given that the Republican is arguing for impeachment and the Democrat is arguing against impeachment.
So it's not dog bites man instead of man bites dog, or is it both?
It's both.
I see.
What did I say? Did I say dog bites man?
You corrected the abstract version.
I don't know.
How dare you?
You know, okay, well, I'm already going to be shot, so what else can you do to me now?
Nothing.
I mean, it's too late. So, John, let's pick up where we left off. And, of course, being the airhead that I am, I don't remember where that was.
Thank you, John Paul. 7 o'clock, Tuesday, January 15th, Carborough Century Center, 1 week from today. Orange County Commission member Moses Carey is going to convene the event. Michelle Cotton Laws, Chapel Hill native and sociologist, a current PhD candidate at North Carolina State, is going to be our hostess. Will be entertained by the Songs of Free Men of the St. Joseph AME Zion All-Male Choir.
And what sort of music will they be entertaining with?
Patriotic stuff.
Interesting.
Stuff to stir the blood of patriots in keeping with our presentation of flags. And we have a wonderful graphic artist who's produced some great posters and flyers and invitations for us, Barbara Stanley down in Shalotte. She had planned to submit to a competition, graphic competition, for the sesquicentennial of the Lincoln-Douglas debates from 1857. And she was too busy doing artwork for us to compete in that submission, but she's brought a historic flavor and style to the graphic work for our event.
That was certainly noble of her.
That is certainly reminiscent of the times of Lincoln Douglas, and in keeping with our concern that we face a constitutional crisis today as grave as any since the days of Lincoln and Douglas.
Absolutely.
You know, I just remembered there was something I was going to say earlier about the argument against impeachment. One of them being that there's just not enough votes to get impeachment to go through, and there's not enough votes in the Senate to convict. Well, when I watched the whole
process, we can come by and help. We'll add some votes.
We can jump in there and throw some votes their way. When the Nixon thing was happening, Watergate, all that stuff was happening, I watched that stuff very closely back then. Every second of the hearings, I watched every single bit of it. I watched all the work up to it. When people started talking about an investigation into Nixon's activities, there weren't enough votes in the House of Representatives.
John Paul, you might remember that Nixon had just won a landslide 49-state reelection victory as president.
Exactly. So that's just a spurious argument. It's specious to say that you don't have enough votes. Of course, you know, you don't have enough votes because none of the information has been examined in Senate hearings, House hearings yet, to actually do an impeachment investigation. So it's just a stupid argument that we don't have enough votes.
And bringing Nixon back into the picture, the current crimes far exceed the Nixon administration, if that's even possible.
Absolutely. John Dean has said that. He has repeatedly said that this is much worse than what Nixon did.
Absolutely.
What Bush has done is much worse.
We're looking at crimes of great historical level in this Bush-Cheney administration, going to war on false witness, false testimony.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thousands of American service men and women killed, tens of thousands wounded and maimed,
more than a million innocents killed.
Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis killed and millions displaced.
There's estimates of over a million now that died as a result.
I think this administration truly holds them in the category of insects.
And one of the impeachment articles that Dennis Kucinich has introduced against Cheney is Vice President Cheney, H.R. 799, that is now sitting in the Judiciary Committee waiting on hearings. One of the impeachment articles against Cheney is that he is attempting the same fraudulent push for war against Iran that he pushed against Iraq. So this impeachment movement is an effort to hold Bush and Cheney accountable for their crimes committed to date and to prevent future wars of aggression.
Now, Tell me something when you say accountable and the whole concept of impeachment here. Does this mean that once they get impeached, in other words, taken out of office,
well, no,
involuntarily, does this mean that they will also go right to jail and pay for their crimes?
Impeachment is not a removal. Impeachment is an indictment. The House votes on whether or not to impeach an officer in the federal government.
But once it's decided upon,
then once they have decided that he needs to be tried, that's what impeachment does. It says, okay, now the Senate has to try this person in a trial like you would have in a court with different rules. But impeachment itself is not the instrument that removes.
No, I understand him. That's more the unseating or the question.
Well, the indictment.
The indictment. And then it goes to the impeachment hearings. And does this in any way become a legal issue?
Actually, it doesn't go to impeachment hearings. Impeachment hearings would be held before impeachment is voted upon by the full House.
Well, explain this to me, Lucy.
I'm doing it. Okay. And then once the House has voted to impeach, it goes to the Senate where they hold the trial.
How long before they put the asses in jail?
The trial is not called impeachment. It's a trial, and then the Senate is not empowered to imprison a president or any other federal officer who is successfully convicted in the Senate.
So what happens?
When they convict him, mm-hmm. if he's convicted, he is then removed from office. They decide whether he should be removed from office as part of the trial.
Mm-hmm. And once removed, then what? I mean, is legal action then taken? Is legal recourse, since we are a nation of laws, is law enacted upon?
Not in the Senate. But the information that comes out during the trial can be used in criminal proceedings so that the person can be indicted in a criminal court. And that's what I've been advocating now since the election of 2000.
Because I consider this to me is criminal, what's going on.
It is. You're right.
It should be treated like any other criminal.
These are horrendous crimes against humanity.
Absolutely.
And war crimes. One of which, by the way, is the false flag attack on 9/11.
I'd explain that. False flag. What do you mean?
False flag is a term that's historical. That came from the period of time when nations would raise the flag of other countries or groups on their ships to make it appear to those who were observing that the attackers were from X country or group.
I see.
Right. And then,
and how are you tying this into 9/11?
Well, the false flag aspect of 9/11 is that it's claimed that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda did the attack with help from the government of Afghanistan by harboring the people who were planning the attacks. So that's the false flag part of it. When in fact, the attack was carried out and planned and carried out through the auspices of various people in the U.S. government itself.
And then, of course, the Bush remedy was, let's go attack their neighbors.
And that's why they did it, so they could do those attacks, and so they could run roughshod over the population of the United States and
fear tactics.
Right, and basically shred the Constitution. So that's part of it. Now, you're probably not going to hear Bruce Fein or Michael Tomosky talk about 9/11 as a part of the indictment against Bush and Cheney, because... you know, I don't know exactly why they don't really look with an open eye at those things, but I guess it's mainly because they know that they will be shunned by the U.S. press if they ever mention the idea, even, that 9/11 may have been perpetrated by people within our own government.
Yeah, for some reason, people want to shy away from that, but the computer is exposing more and more and more of that as less a conspiracy theory and more as fact.
Well, the official story that the government puts out is a conspiracy theory. And
yes,
it's a stupid conspiracy theory. It's one that only someone who is just completely uninformed would agree with.
Well, consider the source.
I mean, there's so many facts in the public domain now that make it very clear that the story that the 9/11 Commission put out is complete balderdash.
Again, there's a documentary I highly recommend if you can get your hands on it. And what was the name of that again, John?
Are you talking about Loose Change?
Loose Change.
There's a better one.
The revised,
but that's a good
edition.
One.
Loose Change is a good one to start with.
It is.
The people that put that together did an amazing job. What's the other one?
The better one is 9/11 Mysteries by Sophia.
And what makes that better? Because I was pretty amazed at what Loose Change put out.
It does a better job of going into the scientific information, but without sounding scientific, using lay language. They really explain well the laws of thermodynamics that come into play when you're looking at the collapse of buildings 1, 2, and 7.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about the laws of motion in a way that someone who has no background in math or science...
So more technologically based.
...can easily understand, yeah.
Mm, gotcha.
It's technologically based, but it doesn't use techno-speak.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, back to you, John Heuer.
Heuer.
Let me get it straight. I keep trying to recognize his name in a German way.
Well,
it's the German in me, sorry.
Thank you, Claudio. And my family is German, my father's family. And my father was served in World War II and was a senior officer of an Allied command that liberated the camp at Buchenwald.
Oh, wow.
Where the Germans were burning in ovens their victims.
Yes.
And as a man of German ancestry, my father was never able to forgive the German people for their crimes.
This is how wrong the government can go when you let it keep going.
And in my family, this has given us some immunity to the exceptionalism that so many Americans feel that this country, the United States of America, can do no wrong.
Huh.
And we obviously have a long tradition of great crimes, great wrongs.
Yes, from we do.
Genocide of Native Americans to slavery to commissions of wars that defy law and morality. And we're currently engaged in another set of great crimes.
Yeah, it doesn't stop, does it? Sad to say, we discussed earlier off mic that we actually have a little seafaring background in common. I spent a considerable time at sea. I've written productions for the stage that are maritime, and you told me that your mother. I'll let you take the story.
Well, my introduction to the sea kind of came from the stage, 1967, from University of Michigan Gilbert and Sullivan Society, singing and dancing on the deck of the HMS Pinafore.
I've actually worked the play.
I have too.
Traveling to New York and joining the National Maritime Union, shipping to Europe and Africa, and the next year sailing out of San Francisco to Asia.
And you yourself were in the Merchant Marines, you said.
Yes, right? Yeah. And I found out later that my family has quite a long history of seafaring. My grandmother was shipwrecked off the coast of Cape Hatteras in 1899, rescued after she and her family and crew drifted for 9 days at risk of going to the bottom with the next wave.
Exposure in itself would be devastating at that point.
Right. But my mother's family's... we're from Prince Edward Island, and we're fishermen and women and sailors, commercial captains.
Where do they live now?
There's family still in Prince Edward Island. Okay. Hope to be up there to visit them here before too long. My mother, sister, and brothers actually grew up in Nova Scotia, which was my refuge when I refused induction in Richard Nixon's army in 1970.
Good for you. Yeah. Good for you. Well, thanks for giving us that tidbit of information. John Paul, any more on media for right now, or shall we play a little more music?
Well, I was going to earlier mention...
you weren't.
the new information that comes from physics professor Stephen Jones of Brigham Young University, who's done a lot of work on identifying what happened to the towers and the Building 7 in the WTC. His latest issue is information about tests that he's done on the dust from New York City following 9/11.
Yeah, I remember hearing something about that.
And what he did was he used mass spectrometry to identify the materials in the residue and discovered that there were microspheres that can only be formed by the explosives used in demolition.
Detonation devices.
Detonation devices and the actual explosives, thermite and thermate, which are the types of explosives that are used to cut columns when you want to bring a building down, and they're called shape charges, and you shape them at an angle on the beam so that the beam slides one way or the other, forcing the building to fall a certain way. Mm-hmm. And these residues that are produced have certain tags of the elements in them that you can look at when you test them. And these patterns are shown in a graph that is exactly identical to the residue of thermate and thermite.
Interesting.
So he has basically proven without a doubt that thermite and thermite were used in the destruction of buildings 1, 2, and 7.
Further revelations on the subject. Also want to mention, again, this is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, here in the studio today with John Ewer and my co-host, John Paul McClellan. Want to mention that next week, oh, not next week, actually on the 29th, I guess that's a couple of weeks from now, Peggy Taphorn, the new director of Temple Theatre in Sanford, North Carolina, will be on, and she has an amazing background in both Broadway and just the arts in general. Looking forward to having her on for the hour.
And she's brand new down there, right?
Yes, she is.
Yeah, she's the new director.
Just summoned in, and a delightful person. Looking forward to having her on.
Lovely.
And I think at this point we should go to one more tune, but maybe not quite as lengthy.
Should we maybe try to finish up with John before we do that? Because we're going to be out of here before too much
longer. I guess
longer.
I haven't looked at the clock. Well, I guess we better forget those tunes.
Let's let John...
We'll stick to the closing tunes.
...sort of sum up what's going on with the debate.
Sorry, America, I didn't look at the time.
Thank you, Claudio and John Paul. Again, next Tuesday, January 15th, 7 o'clock at the Carborough Century Center... We've begun calling Carrboro the cradle of impeachment since we began our effort here. We invited Cindy Sheehan and Veterans for Peace on their Journey for Humanity to come to Carrboro.
Do you have a response?
They came.
Well, oh, right. Of course, I remember that. Yeah.
Right. And they'll be back. They love Carrboro.
That's what I meant. I'll
be seeing Cindy Sheehan the week after our debate. We're having a peace conference in San Francisco. Harding Carter Jr., Harding Carter III will be moderating the debate between Republican Bruce Fein speaking for impeachment and Democrat Michael Tomosky arguing against impeachment. We have the male chorus from the St. Joseph AME Zion Church. Orange County Commission Chairman Moses Carey will be the convener. The good people at the Open Eye Cafe will be providing hospitality for us.
Wonderful. So they've supported some of our shows there.
I expect this will be the best program in town on January 15th, and I urge you and your listeners to join us if you can.
Absolutely. If you're interested in the shape of the country, I think it'd be a good idea to come to the event.
Yes, thank you
also
very much.
Also, wanted to mention there was another point that I'm completely missing the boat on right now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Hold on, let me make sure I have got myself covered here. Derailed on that notion.
Well, maybe it'll come back before we completely sign off. Well, thank you very much, John Huer, for coming by and giving us this straight dope on what's happening with the impeachment debate here.
I know what I was talking about. John and I spoke earlier, and he is actually putting together a CD of
impeachment songs and drums.
And I love that idea. Let me know when they come out because I'd love to play them here.
Gladly. Thank you.
Wonderful.
I knew it'd come back to me. Senior moments that keep slipping in. You haven't warned me about
those. You're a little bit too young to have senior moments.
Well, I'd like to think so, but why do they keep happening?
So, do you want to play some more music?
I guess. What kind of time frame have we got left?
We've got about 4 or 5 minutes.
Let's give them a little more African music before we go out with music of our own.
What cut?
And I would say let's go to cut 11. It's called, performed by Def Shepherd. And it's Millennium Village.
Here we go. Thank you.
And that was by Def Shepherd on our World Carnival tour here at WCOM 103.5 FM, Claudio Speakeasy, The Literary and All Else. And the title of that by Def Shepherd was Millennium Village.
All right, we're running out of time, so what do you say we go right to our closing music?
Hey, folks, thanks for joining us, and tune us in again next year. Until then, all the best. Cheers.
Once again, a chill night wind blows its gales across the sea. As the sunset casts an inflamed and rippled hue across the waters. Vast distances of liquid motion stretch their infinity before me. And I have rarely felt so free. The sails are drawn for a night of rest. Where I go from here, the sea knows best. As the veils of night descend upon me, the moon emits its silvery canvas against a spectacle of aquatic celebration, as is only seen by night. The stars are scattered worlds of light against an opaque sky, and the nightfall is a constant whisper of the mysteries around me. Truly, all description would defy the beauty I choose herein to proclaim. Yet still, though encompassed by more wonder than many a man has e'er freed his soul to admire, my thoughts are adrift with a song of my heart, and the song of my heart with a voice of my soul. Adrift, adrift, adrift. Drifting ever back to you.